Isn't it awesome to be in the presence of God?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Isn't it awesome to... I hope it's awesome to be in the presence of God. I don't know if you have those friends in your life that when you're around, they're just the most draining thing in the world. Have you ever been around people like that? Like the people that you talk with and it's just like, why do I even hang out with you? It's like when I'm around you, I feel... like belittled and like, does anybody have those friends that you just hang out with that just cut you down all the time? Like, come on, we can be honest. This is honesty hour. Maybe they're sitting beside you and they need this confession right now. They need to see that you're maybe you just need to point at them and go, that's you, dude. Yeah, like I've been around those people. Like I've been around those people that just all they ever want to do. See if you relate to this one. All they ever want to do is like find all your imperfections and your flaws. Like they can just watch you eat. And as they watch you eat, they're just like going, did you not even drink it out of the straw right? What is up with you? You hold your fork like that? You're a weirdo. Like those people that just, like all they want to do is just like pick and pick. And my wife said that when we were dating, she said, Dustin, you did that a lot. Like you would just pick on me. Is anybody in here like an aggravator? You just like to aggravate people? And here's the fun part about aggravating. Like the thing that feeds you the most is when it starts getting on their nerves and then you're just like, oh, yeah, right where I want you. My brother used to do that to me. It was frustrating. You know, unfortunately, we as Christians, we have this idea sometimes that our goal in life is just to pick out people's mess-ups and their flaws and their imperfections. Like, we can be some of the most judgmental people. It's like it's so easy for us to look at everybody else and just go, oh, you're broken. You're messed up. You're flawed. You don't have this figured out. And somehow we just kind of bypass ourselves. Do you have those friends in your life that are the ones that maybe they don't pick out your imperfections? Maybe they're the ones that when you're around them, there's just peace and there's comfort. And you just know that everything's going to be okay. Hey, that's okay. We need those people. You know what? Here's the reality. We as humans, we are seeking a better life. As humans, we want to live this incredible life. And you know what? Sometimes we seek all these other different things to try to find that. And we need those people around us that can give us that hope and that comfort. But here's the reality, and it's just my blanket statement for tonight is this right here. Nothing is going to give you comfort and peace and hope like Jesus Christ. There's nothing. And tonight, I've got a passage that I want to read to you guys, and it's a narrative. It's right out of John, and it's this story of Jesus. And this is probably in the study of this and in the past couple days as I've just been talking this out and I've been reading and I've been talking with other people and sharing with other people what God has been teaching me. Like it has just been opening my eyes to the incredibleness of Jesus and how he is that best possible friend that we can have that's going to come to us and we can come to him that's going to give us peace and going to give us hope and it's going to give us a future. But it is only found in Jesus. And tonight we're going to see that. And so I want to read this story, and I want you to do this with me. I want you just to close your eyes. Sometimes I like to think like this, and sometimes I don't think this is wrong, but I'll take, as I read things, sometimes I'll kind of screenplay it, and I'll make a movie with it, just to kind of get a bigger picture, maybe a creative picture, so that you can think the way you need to think, and put whatever stars you want to put with whatever person, and but I just want you just to process this with me for just a minute. They went each to his own house. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. And the next day, early in the morning, he came again to the temple, and all the people came to him, and they sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. In placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Jesus, teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now, in the law of Moses, we are commanded to stone such women. So what do you say, Jesus?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. They might have some charge against to bring Jesus. And Jesus bent down and he wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and he wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. And Jesus stood up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." I just want you just to keep your eyes closed, and I want you just to kind of keep replaying this. I want you to see kind of what's going on as these people are bringing this woman caught in adultery before Jesus in front of all of these people. And as they said, "All right, Jesus, Old Testament, the law says we got to stone her. What do you say?" Just think through this. Just process it. Just to look right here for just a minute. I want to take this passage and I want to help it come alive to you. I want to paint a picture of an incredible Savior, and I want to use a sinful woman to do that. So here we are. Jesus comes out to the temple. And imagine the temple maybe being something like this, where Jesus is kind of sitting up front and he's sitting on the ground and everybody else is sitting on the ground and his legs are all crossed up because that's just kind of how they do it in the East, and they're just kind of all just kind of hanging out. And in the middle of his teaching, it would be like the same as all of a sudden those back doors just kind of busting open and a group of people in the church, not even pastors, not even priests, but just people who were in the church were dragging this woman up front to me. Maybe just kind of tattered and torn in her clothes, maybe not even wearing all of her clothes, and brings her right up front and looks at me in the face and says, "All right, Dustin, we just caught this woman in adultery." You need to understand something. Adultery, if you're not familiar with this, was a pretty serious crime. Adultery in the Old Testament, adultery through the law, was this serious crime. And adultery was when one person who was married would go and would have sex with someone else. But it didn't stop there. Whoever was engaged to someone else to be married, if they had sex with someone and they were unfaithful to their future husband, they were breaking the law as well, and they were adulterers. It also probably holds under that fornicators, those who are having sex and they're not married and they're not engaged, but here's the deal, they're cheating on their future spouses. This was a serious crime. This was a serious crime that deserved a very serious death according to their law. You see, a person who was married and they cheated on someone, they were brought before people and tried and judged, and then they were killed, they were stoned, or they were strangled. A girl who was engaged, She was brought before the Sanhedrin. She was tried. And then this woman, this woman who was to be married, who messed up and cheated, was taken to the doorsteps of her dad's house and was stoned in front of her dad and her brothers. Why? Because they looked at adultery and said, "This is a sick, life-tearing apart, family-destroying sin that needs to be dealt with severely." And so this woman is being dragged to the front. Can you kind of picture that? Like, I don't imagine she's just kind of like, "Hey, where are we going, guys? This is cool." Like, this woman is being drugged, teeth clenched, mad, frustrated, spitting, cussing. She's just going, "Where are you taking me?" And they're dragging her to the front. And they look at Jesus and they say, "Hey, Jesus, by the way, we caught this woman in the midst of adultery." Get a picture of this for just a minute. Let me tell you something. To catch someone in the act of adultery means that you have to know that something's fixing to go down. You see, the only way that you can accuse someone of adultery, and the only way that you can bring a proper charge against someone with adultery, is if you see, you and someone else see two people not looking like they're having sex, but having sex, that you recognize both of them, and then you come crashing into the party, pulling people off, and then dragging them to the court. You got this picture with me? Kind of weird? Because that's what's happened right now. But you know the interesting thing about this? Listen to me. Here's the interesting thing about this. The interesting thing about it is this right here. Do you realize that the Pharisees and the scribes have no concern for this woman? Like, they're not even concerned about whether or not they're going to get to stone this woman. What is it that they're interested in doing? They've got something against Jesus. Like, there's something about Jesus that they're just going, "Listen, we don't like you, so we're gonna set you up." So all of this that has taken place is a setup for Jesus. It's a complete setup. They don't care about this woman. They don't care that this woman is in an adulterous relationship. They don't care that she's the town whore. They don't care anything about that. All they care about is, how can we mess Jesus up so that we can get this dude out of here? So it's a setup. This whole project, not even done legally. You know how we know it's not done legally? Because here's a question for you. Who did they bring before Jesus? The woman? Where's the man? Have you ever wondered that? Where's the man? Do you know what happens in an adulterous relationship? They stone both of them. And you know what they do to the man? They bury this man in dung up to his knees. They take a towel around his neck and they strangle him till he's dead, and then he falls over and he lays in the poop. Because they want them to see this is disgraceful. But the man's not there. So what happened? These Pharisees wanting to catch Jesus in something that is very, very... well, it could just be very difficult for him to make a decision of what to do, maybe. And so they hire a man to sleep with a woman. They follow this woman to the house. They watch it take place. They barge in, and then they take her to Jesus. And so now they stand there. And they ask Jesus a very, very specific question. "Jesus, we're supposed to stone her. We're supposed to kill her right now. What are we supposed to do? You tell me, Jesus, what do we do about this?" They were trying to catch him. So if he goes with "let's stone him," then all of a sudden the Roman community that he's around is going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Jews have no right to stone anybody. Jews have no right to condemn someone and kill them." But if he goes with the Romans, then the Jews are going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. I thought you said you were a man of the law. I thought you said that you knew the law and you followed the law. You came to fulfill the law." So he's caught in this catch-22 now. So either way he answers, something bad is fixing to happen. And Jesus looks at him and says this right here. All right? You who is without sin, go ahead and pick up a rock and throw it at her. You who is without sin, go ahead, condemn her. Kill her. You know what he was really saying to him? He was saying this right here. Hey, those of you who've not committed the same adultery in your heart that she's done with this man, go ahead. Those of you who watched these two have this relationship and then drug them out, you tell me that you didn't have adultery in your heart as you watched that take place? Go ahead, throw the stone. Throw it. And then he squats back down and he starts to draw it on the ground. And they start walking off, one at a time, starting with the oldest to the youngest. Because he knew, and they knew, that Jesus had opened up the sin that was in their own life, in their own heart. You know, as Christians, we can be some of the most unloving, judging people there is. I've been around believers and Christians that make it their mission and their aim to go out and just tell everybody else, this is what you're doing wrong. And the problem is, they're doing it too. It's so easy for us to call someone else on the carpet and lay someone else's sin out on the table so for everybody to see it. I don't know why we do that. I don't know if it's so that we can look good or if we can just make them look bad because we don't like them. But either way, we just kind of say, hey, everybody, check this person out. And we judge. And Jesus looks at us and says, why do you worry about the speck that's in someone else's eye when you hadn't even looked and taken care of the log that's in your own? Like we have this tendency to call everybody else out on the carpet, but yet we don't deal with the sin that's in our own lives. And so these Pharisees, these law-abiding citizens and these scribes that know it all, the peacekeepers of the city that are making sure everybody knows that they're doing wrong, are trying to catch Jesus, but Jesus simply looks back at them and says, listen, you're no different than her. Why do you get to cast the stone? Why do you get to kill her? Why is that your responsibility? You've still got junk in your own life. I think it's a big lesson that we can learn. Huge lesson that we need to learn. And so now the Pharisees and the scribes, they're gone. And this woman who is probably laying down on the ground, nasty, filthy, dirty, just broken to pieces, humiliated because she's been brought out on like that time CNN and everybody's been taking pictures of her on their iPhone and like sending it off to other people and everybody's already Facebooked about it and everybody's already tweeted about it. Like this woman has just been humiliated, all right? Her sin has just been laid bare to the world. And so now it's her and Jesus. And Jesus is kind of down, drawing on the ground. And she looks at him and says, or he looks at her and says, is anybody here? Is there anybody here still? Are the ones that were going to condemn you, the ones that were going to stone you, are they still standing here? And she looks up and she looks around and she goes, no. And then the most powerful words, neither do I condemn you. He says, woman, neither do I condemn you. Do you know what he's saying here? Like sometimes we listen to this and we go that he's just going, woman, hey, woman, sinner. Do you know the woman that he's using is the same way that he spoke to his mom? When Jesus looks at her for what she really is, not this broken, abused, used woman laying on the ground, but he looks at her and says this right here. Hey, woman, one who I love, one that I know is broken and hurting right now, one whose sin has just been mailed out across the world, woman, I don't condemn you either. What an incredible picture. Think about this for a minute. This woman who, yes, was caught in the middle of ridiculous sin and nasty sin, Jesus doesn't look at her and go, it's okay. He looks at her and says, I've got a new life for you, a life that is absolutely incredible. Hey, woman, what these men brought you to this day, what men brought you here to, as harm and as pain and as hurt and as in death, hey, listen, woman, I want to give you life. What was terrible, hey, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to take care of you. Many of you right now are right where this woman is. Your life is full of sin. Your life is broken. Your life is torn apart. Some of you, your lives are so torn apart that your whole school knows about it. Like it's public. But so many of us, we're like this woman, we're broken, we're hurting, but it's right here on the inside of us, and our lives are being ripped apart, and our lives are being totally torn up because of the sin, and it's right inside of us. But I need you to understand something. Like this woman who is before Jesus, and Jesus knows everything there is to know about this woman, Jesus knows everything there is to know about you right now. Jesus knows everything about you right now. Jesus knows all of your sin. Jesus knows all of your brokenness. Jesus knows everything that is rotten and wretched about you. You lay on the ground before Jesus, bare, wide open, bearing this mark that just says, I am accused and condemned. I am rotten and I am broken, and we wear it. And Jesus goes, I see it all. And then he looks at us and he says, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. He's saying, listen, the life of sin that you're living right now, I can tell you that can stop right now. Your brokenness, your hurt, your pain, I am a friend to you. I am your lover to you, and I can take your sin and I can forgive you of your sin. And I can heal you and make you better. I can make you new. Do you realize that at this point in time, with the woman and with Jesus, do you realize that because of Jesus and who he was, that he could have picked up a stone and just said, I'm sorry. He could have stoned her. He could have. You ever wonder why he didn't? I mean, if the law... I mean, wouldn't weren't we supposed to go by the law here? Wasn't it the law that says that if a woman is condemned in adultery, that we're to stone her? Yeah, because Romans 6:23 says, for the wages of sin is death. Hey, let me tell you something. Do you know that your sin in your life right now, the sin that is in your life without Jesus, condemns you to death? Do you realize that if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, that your sin is nothing more than condemnation on you that will take you to eternal death? So she could have died. It could have been game over. This Jesus just said, boom, you're dead. And that's what she deserved. She deserved that. She deserved to die. Every one of us deserves to die. Are you getting this picture? Are you getting this picture of the wretchedness of sinful nature and the wretchedness of us? We deserve to die. We do not deserve to be in this room right now saying, Jesus, Hosanna, come by here. We don't deserve to do this because of our sin. So why can we? Why are we able to come into the presence of God? Why can we do this? Because of Jesus. Because of Jesus. Because of his grace. Because of his mercy. Do you know why he didn't stone her? Do you know why he didn't just kill the Pharisees for bringing someone up here illegally? You know why he didn't? Because he knew that in days or weeks or months that he was going to go to the cross as the final sacrifice so that all who sin can have forgiveness. So that anyone who calls on the name of the Lord and says, Jesus, I am broken and I am hurting and I need your grace and I need your mercy and I know that your death on the cross gives me that. Jesus, I need you. I need you. This woman was in the best place that she could be, the feet of Jesus. What was meant for harm and what was meant to trap Jesus turned out into this incredible picture of forgiveness and redemption and salvation. Why? Because she was at the foot of Jesus and Jesus says, I can make your life better. I can make your life better. But you have to come to me. You got to come to me. Tonight, you can come to Jesus. Tonight in your brokenness, tonight in your hurt, tonight in your pain, tonight in the midst of your sin, as black and nasty as it is, do you know what Jesus says to you? I love you. I don't care how messed up you are. I don't care how many people you've had sex with. I don't care if you're homosexual. I don't care if you're heterosexual. I don't care if you've got a porn problem. I don't care if you've got a gossip problem. I don't care. I don't care how messed up and broken you think you are. You are not too broken for the grace of Jesus Christ. If that were the case, then I don't deserve to stand here. I don't deserve to be here on this stage talking to you because I'm a messed up individual. And those of you who think you're religious, without Jesus, you don't even deserve to be sitting in the chair that you're sitting in. I'm just curious. You don't have to answer this by raising your hand. I wonder how many of you just need to come to Jesus tonight. I wonder if there's anybody in here who's just going, I really thought I was too broken to come to Jesus. I thought I was too messed up. I thought my sin was too vile. Dustin, I've just been coming to church to try to straighten my life up so that I could get better, so that I could eventually come to Jesus. Let me tell you something, it doesn't work like that. And there's a lot of religious people out there that right now are trying to cover up their sin with reading the Bible and trying to cover up their sin with coming to church and trying to cover up their sin by doing all of these different good things, and you wonder why your sin is still so black in your life. It's because you hadn't come to Jesus. You've come to religious stuff, but you haven't come to Jesus. You hadn't come to Jesus. But Jesus knows everything about you right now. And he's saying, you're nasty and you're messed up, but I can give you hope and I can give you purity and I can cover your sin and I can make you holy. And I love 2 Corinthians 5:21. It says this, that God made him who knew no sin, Jesus, to become sin on our behalf, listen, so that we can become the righteousness of God. Did you hear that? That Jesus died on the cross and took our sin so that you could be as holy as God. But the invitation is this, you got to come to me. You got to come to me. You got to come to me. Broken and all. But isn't that so scary? Isn't it scary? Isn't it scary to think that we get to come before to Jesus and say, here's my sin. Here I am. Maybe you're afraid that he's just going to strike you dead. Maybe he's going to be the one that's waiting up there with a stone. Just saying, come on. But he's waiting like this. Hey, whether you're saved or whether you've never experienced Jesus, tonight there's some of you that need to come to Jesus. There's some of you that need to come to him and say, Jesus, I am broken and I am hurting and I need you. I want you just to bow your heads with me for just a minute. Band's going to make their way up here and we're going to sing one more song, but this is not about singing a song. I just have a question. There's nothing going to be pretty about this invitation. There's not going to be anything pretty about how we do this. I've got a question for you. Is anybody honest enough right now that they can hold their hand up and say, I need to come to Jesus tonight? Maybe it's not salvation. Maybe you just got sin in your life that you're just going, I need to come sit before Jesus and experience him. I need it bad. Anybody honest enough and just brutal enough to say, that's me and I need it. That's me and I need it. If that's you, here's what I want you to do, and I'm going to call you to this. I want right where you are, I want you to stand up. I want you to stand up. If that's you, I want you to stand up. If you're just going, I'm broken, and I need Jesus, I want you just to stand up. Every one of you, all across this place. Yeah. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask you to take a step and a movement in this. If that's you, I'm going to ask you to come down here. Just come down here. Come here. And I want you just to spread out across the front of this place up here. I want you just to spread out. Just spread out all across. Spread out. I want you to get on your knees. You don't have to face everybody else. I want you just to get on your knees. You can just wrap around. If you're out there and you want to be up here too, come on down. Come on down. You don't need to drag someone up here with you. If you're broken and you need Jesus, just come down here. Now, for those of you who are up here on the stage right now, here's what I assume. I assume that you got junk in your life that you just need to lay before the Lord and just say, Jesus, I am gross and I am dirty. And Jesus, I lay my sin at your feet and I ask that your grace would cover me. I ask that the blood that you shed on the cross would forgive me. God, I need your forgiveness. Hey, it starts right there. It starts with you just simply confessing to God. So just confess. Don't hold it back. He knows it. He knows how gross you are. That's okay. that's okay. Just take some time and do business with God. Now I'm going to call us to one other thing. And maybe you're up here around the stage and this is where you are. Maybe you're out in the audience right now and this is where you are. If you've never surrendered to Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, if you have never said, Jesus, I need you to save me of my sin. If that's you, and I know there's got to be some of you in here, here's what I'm going to call you to do. This is public. We got to be public about this. If that's you, I want you to come stand with me. I want you to stand with me right here. If you've never accepted Jesus as your Savior and you want to surrender your life to Him, just come down with me. You're not going to stand up here for very long. I'm going to put you with someone. But if that's you, just come down here. You may be the only one. That's okay. Do you want Jesus? Do you want to experience His grace and His mercy? If that's the case, then just come here. You may be it. You may be the only one. If you're up here and that's you, come over here. Something else we're going to do. Come to Northwood. It's going to be a little bit different. That's okay. We as a church that I guess have it all figured out, our job is to pray for these people. Our job is to pray for these people. Our job is to come over them and say, you know what? I pray that you would walk in the strength of God. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. And this is fixing to get real hectic and chaotic. If you know someone up here, I want you to come up and I want you to lay a hand on them. But I want you to be their friend. And I want you to be serious about praying for them. I don't want you just to come up here just to look good. I want you to come up here and I want you to pray because you care that these people want to find grace and forgiveness in Christ. Just come up. I want you to lay a hand on them.